Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You are listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review Podcast. We find little nuggets, treasures, valuable pieces of gold in the Joe Rogan Experience Podcast and pass them on to you, perhaps expand a little bit. We are not associated with Joe Rogan in any way. Think of us as the Talking Dead to Joe's Walking Dead. Enjoy the show. Podcast.
You're listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review.
What a bizarre thing we've created.
Now with your host, Adam Thorne.
This might either be the worst podcast or the best one
Two,
of all time.
One, go. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the JRE Review. Joined, as always, by my right-hand man, Garrett. What's up, bro?
What's up, bros and brosettes?
Okay, who we got this week? We got Scott Eastwood, who took me about 30 minutes to realize that's Clint Eastwood's kid. That was embarrassing.
He was like Dan Bilzerian almost, I thought.
How so?
I don't know. He was just well-spoken. He was well-traveled. It's just a young, up-and-coming buck, obviously.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant seemed like he fucks a lot of women.
No, I'm sure he does that, too. I don't know if he's married, but he's Clint Eastwood's kid. He's a pimp.
Who else we got? David Lee Roth. And who is that scientist? Rick Doblin. All right. So what was your take on Eastwood's kid? I mean, he seemed, you know, you got to think his life has been, I don't want to say super privileged, like that would be an assumption, but I mean, it's definitely an unusual upbringing. And I would imagine the kids of very famous actors have kind of it's probably a very strange life.
Especially in his case, like, you can always say who's the most famous, but of his era, it's pretty much Clint Eastwood in his prime was the man. So yeah, that's got to have some impact on your lifestyle and how you perceive life. I think that he seemed incredibly grounded given the circumstances, to be honest. I don't know the guy, but it seemed like he had a relative thought process and he seemed pretty mindful of how he had it and, I mean, what his advantages were in a lot of respects.
He was certainly a good listener and good on the podcast. I mean, he wasn't acting like super entitled in the sense of talking over Joe or like boasting about silly stories or...
I liked how he talked about his, like, Joe started talking about Westerns, and I don't know if you've engulfed yourself in Westerns. I really haven't, but it made me kind of want to watch a few more of his Westerns from back in the day if they're that impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean...
And to hear Scott talk about it, too, and have his favorite ones, it's got to be great, like, watching your pops. And that's the thing, too. It's like, you get, like, actor friends watching them commit to a character. It's like a... Like his friends were saying, he's like, you are too good at that character. It's like, it's got to be an interesting perspective to have to know the guy in the movie.
Yeah, it would be weird, I think.
I did like they were talking about surfing and whatnot and how that killer whale came up to him and underneath of his, they showed that video too. I don't know if you were privy to see that, but the video was surreal. Like the killer whales came right underneath him. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did watch a bit of that video. You know, it's sometimes difficult because when my Spotify is connected to my car, obviously you don't get to watch the video, so sometimes right. I have to, like, once I stop driving, go back to, like, get into it. I don't think I'd feel all that comfortable with those big ass fucking things. Can't they just, like, flip you like 60 feet in the air if they want to?
I mean, I don't know if you've seen those videos from fucking SeaWorld. That's the thing, though. It's like they had those ones in captivity. If you were to see, like, I don't think that, I think that kind of speaks to human nature and how things evolve. And like, if you're out in the, if you're out in the wilderness, the idea is normally peace. Like a lot of the thought, it's like when you capture something and keep it in captivity, that's when they start reacting. And it's like, I don't know that, and it's probably all situational, but I would like to believe if I saw a killer whale, maybe it's just because it's like a pretty animal, I'd be like, ooh, nice whale.
But, you know, they talk about whales and how intelligent they are. So along with intelligence, I wonder if they can, like, they have a range of emotions as well. And if one of them's got, like, a real bad toothache, they might be having a bad day, and they see us monkeys on a surfboard, and they're just like, you know what, I'm just going to fire this bitch. Straightened off, off a cliff. Just whack him.
Fire that one up. Was that the same podcast they were talking about that orangutan, like, basically raped that woman?
Oh, remember that? Yeah.
I think that was the same one they were talking about, that situation. She basically just, like, had to take it. Otherwise, like, who knows? Those things are so strong, they could just, like, bite your fingers
off.
That's
terrifying.
That's terrifying.
Monkey rape is up there. Top five most terrifying things.
Like, literally just rip your arms off if they want to. They're
very strong. Yeah, it would be bad. It's certainly bad. Did you watch the new Guy Ritchie movie that he's in?
I didn't get to that one yet.
Yeah, Wrath of Man. It's... Worth it? Well, I don't know. I mean, they're $20 now to buy these things on YouTube. I mean, that to go to a movie was what, at most, right? 12-13.
But you figure that's four people, call it $10, that's still $40. If you rent the movie at your house, at least you can watch it on a nice couch for $20.
True. I watched it on my own, just... so
right,
so yeah. I'm like, that's an expensive ticket.
Right. I remember during quarantine, it was like, I'll splurge on a $5 movie. What? You had nothing else to do, basically.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden now we have $20 movies coming out, and that's right. the new thing.
We made the market.
Yeah, we did it to ourselves, right. Probably. It's right. Good action. You know, I'm not like a movie critic, but compared to other Guy Ritchie ones, I didn't enjoy as much as some of the other Guy Ritchie movies are like.
Snatch, Lock,
yeah,
Stock.
And they do a lot of jumping around, which this movie does, but it's right. Like they're really building the characters a lot, and then there's a lot of banter back and forth, and then they also does like these montages that are kind of sped up where people are like grabbing things from different places and blah blah blah, and just a lot of those elements were kind of missing. But a lot of people got shot, so if you're just into that kind of action, it's decent.
I still like the John Wicks, but at my age, I like to laugh a lot.
You like to laugh a lot?
I think that's my go-to genre at this point in life. I still like comedy. We were just talking about that at work, like watching horror films. What's your take on that?
I don't care. They're not scary, are they? Yeah. They're just like, what are we watching?
No, I just... That's how I feel. It's like, I don't really like to, it just doesn't seem like a good habit to get into, watching death all the time.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. They kind of get into like the celebrity life and picking people around you, you know, because I guess when people want to know who you are because of like who your dad is or because you're famous or you're just in the know, like where Joe is. It really does highlight how important it is to pick good people. But I think the same rules apply in any area of life. But, you know, and they talk about, you know, how badly humans can kind of treat each other. And it's almost like hate is encouraged in some way, like shit talking or putting people down. Yeah. I don't know. It makes you think. Makes you think about the people around you.
Without a doubt. I've been more mindful about that, I'd say. Like, always having an opinion on other people. And I think that comes back to being married to their ideas. They said that you could always change your ideas. And we beat on that a few times. But it seems like the people that you surround yourself with are, I don't know, I think now that I've gotten older, I've been a much better judge of character, and as opposed to having like an opinion on somebody, I would just like rather not associate. It's not like you have to associate with everybody, and if you choose to not, it's like you don't have to have interactions and don't have to keep relationships that seem to be unhealthy or just not building you up. Just let them phase out, I think is the idea, right? Mm-hmm. You don't, I mean,
yeah, you don't have to have a sit down with them and be like, I don't need you in my life. Just stop hanging out with them.
Exactly.
Just identify that they're a piece of shit and just stop spending time with them.
Yeah. Or just see what's beneficial and then, yeah, like you say, have a sit down, just don't return a few calls, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or just say, moving on. Yeah.
I like a lot of what Joe was talking about as he opened up about the podcast, like getting into just like how big it is, and because of the Spotify deal, like it kind of changed things. Like people know how fucking mega rich he is now, and his voice kind of travels so much further. So he has to kind of deal with that, and he's more responsible for the things that he says almost. But just the fact that he never like promoted the podcast, he never advertised.
I know, I heard him say
it's
that.
So wild that he was able to do this without any of that stuff happening.
I think that's got to be the most compelling thing about the show. Like the fact that it's not, it's all word of mouth. I remember meeting you and I was like, do you watch Joe? That like our first time interacting. I was like, yeah, I watch Rogan. And you were like, just our whole connection was kind of based around Rogan from the jump. And it was like, it wasn't like I saw the billboard or I heard it.
Yeah.
On this and that, I was like, I just heard from my buddy. We both kind of knew the same thing, right?
And then we instantly know that we're both slightly meat-heady.
Like, well, you at least just on the same page. Like, I think that it's a certain like culture of openness is the way I kind of have associated it. And the fact that I think something kind of clicked today. Granted, this has always been going on, but people that approach things that they want to do have a much better tendency of being successful over time. It's not going to be immediate, but if you do what you want to do and you're passionate about, today I was just thinking about that on my skates. It's more about the why than it is the how, because it seems like the how will present itself if you find the why, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, at the same point though, it's hard to say, right? Because he became very successful for doing this, but I don't know if there's a ton of other examples of people doing the same thing. I mean, Joe had a unique combination of skills. He was like well known enough to where, you know, and he was just in a place that kind of made it work. But it is really interesting to see, like, even as we model this silly podcast that we do, it's like it would only make sense that we would follow those same patterns just for the sake of it. Like, I don't care. I'm never going to put an ad in somewhere or like really, I don't know. I'm just not going to change like the way that I speak or say things as a result of any external factors, because it just goes against a philosophy that I believe in. I'm like, no, this is
authenticity is not for sale, I think is what it comes down to.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it may exclude us from running for office anywhere. But
a lot of people have been approaching me for presidency.
Really?
Dude, apparently we're back to bar setting today. Today, I was at Gold's today, and I think I made mention this last time. The mass thing was like semi not informed today. It seemed like everybody was there, like on a mission to not even wear the mask. I know you guys aren't dealing with that in Bozeman, but here in LA, it's been the
yeah, that's a big step for you guys.
And I think today or tomorrow, we're supposed to be able to, we're not able to, but I think everybody's just kind of realizing that this all is for show, and it's all a big fuck you. So all the restaurants and whatnot down by the beach are just like starting to do their own thing and being like, come. We're not waiting until the fucking 15th for you to tell us that everything's okay.
Yeah, that's so dumb. What if they decide on the 15th, why didn't they just say, look, let's just do it today? Like, how dare they just stamp their, oh, here's a date.
Dude, it just feels like they got these little fucking strings up here, and they're like, and I think Joe, I don't know if it was on that one or the next one, but he's like, none of these people have lost a dime throughout this whole process. Mm. And they're all the ones up there. Like, what if that was the thought process? How your community was doing was how much you got paid as a mayor or a governor or somebody in the civil justice area that was supposed to take care of the community. What if it was like a reflection on your salary, how the state that you're supposed to govern,
yeah,
or mayor? Dude, think about the incentives and the thought process that would go into that. You'd be like, you'd have to restructure your whole mindset. Like, ooh, what am I going to do to make my city thrive in this Sim City?
Well, even going back to stuff that Joe's had to put up, and now he's big. Look at the two bits of controversy that's come around. Him saying that young, healthy people don't need to get the vaccine. Not saying they shouldn't, but just saying they don't need to because they're healthy and young, right? So that's valid.
Right.
And then it's valid, not saying that they shouldn't either. Like, you know, if you want to, do it. And if you're really concerned about getting other people sick, also do it, which is a reality. But then them themselves, they're not likely to die of it, right? So it is just to help others, herd immunity. Second, lab hypothesis theory that was like banned on Facebook for a while. Like, Facebook is like, no, we're not going to show anything about this. It's like, what are you doing? And Joe brings it up and he becomes a conspiracy theorist. And now it's like,
so dumb.
Yeah, I'm not saying, look again, Joe was right. It's not that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that he's asking questions and not creating this weird censorship out of fear of others. I'm sure that's why Facebook did it. But it's like, now you're just promoting misinformation, you dummies. Like,
let me tell you my two experiences with COVID. I've already made reference to it. I left LA, went to Puerto Rico, got a COVID test before. COVID test came back positive when I came to Puerto Rico. Didn't change anything, didn't do anything different. Next day, took another test. Test came back negative. Flew back home, no problems. My roommate got the vax so he could go back to work and not have to wear the fucking face shield. That was the quota for his bar for, what, a couple of days, because that was what was in the news. And then so he goes and gets the vax. He goes to, I don't know, some island like Aruba or something. He gets the vaccination prior to. We go and I get the test with him through one of those Walgreens drive-through nasal things. He gets to Aruba. The test comes back inconclusive. So now he's scrambling to get another test so he can get back. This guy has the vaccination.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck is going on here? Like, what are we doing?
Still not as bad as
I have no faith. Yeah, that's a... Dude, that's...
It's wacky across the board. Look, all I'm saying is we can't do this shit again. We got to figure something else out.
Done.
Next flu season can't be like, oh, my God, you can't travel. Like, it just seems like some big plan to stop people going anywhere. And I'm like, nah, I'm not down with that. I love going places. All right, let's jump over to David Lee Roth and the madness of this man. Like, God bless him. Look, legend. He clearly seems like a sweetheart. He's had a seriously eccentric life, and he's about as eccentric as it gets. But it was, I don't know how the fuck Joe did it. Dude, I had to turn the pot off at one point. I was like, this is kind of doing my head in.
I watched that one in pieces. It was like a constant one-liner. He kind of reminded me of my dad in some respects. He had like a joke for everything. But he's well-traveled. He's probably had way more experiences than we could even fucking fathom.
No doubt. To be honest. No doubt. Fascinating life.
Yeah, the amount of books. You could tell he was well-read, too. When you say eccentric, like you talk about getting that tapping tattoo and... did he go to Japan? I can't remember where he got
it. Yeah, it was in Japan, was a lot of it, because I think he speaks Japanese too, and he lived there for a while. But I mean, yeah, all the people he's trained martial arts with, the fact that he became an EMT just because, and then they were like, hey, you want to do the rounds? And for 4 years, he's like the guy making coffee. I'm like, this is fucking David Lee Roth. Like, how humbling and kind of beautiful is that whole experience?
I think that Joe made reference to that too, because he's like, you're the most rock star of rock star who does the anti rock star.
Yeah.
Which makes it that much more rock star.
So maybe that's because it's what he's known for so long. I mean, but I'll tell you what, right? So training jiu-jitsu in Santa Monica, Ricky Rocket was at our gym, and he's the drummer for Poison. So, you know, he's older. So I don't think he's as old as David Lee Roth is. No, he's not. But he's like one of our highest level black belts. Super nice guy. You would just never know. You'd never, like, he doesn't walk around like he's the shit. He's just kind and nice and excellent at training and just always will help you with techniques. And, you know, he does his little projects. And if you follow him on Instagram, he's like doing these, like, I think it's like ghost hunting shows that he like puts together on YouTube, just like fun shit that he's into. And it's cool to see that, you know, there's just no pretentiousness out of
connection to humanity and whatever.
Yeah. He's not as eccentric and wacky as David though. I'll tell you that much. He's far more just like totally normal to talk to, but yeah, it was so hard to follow him. He would just go off. Like he almost had these like cliche little sayings about everything, and then ended. It was so difficult to keep track of it.
A walking one liner, but yeah, the way he described his parents though, that was such an interesting thing. The way he said that they still sat down, and they called him children.
Yeah, even into like this, his 60s, they had this
60s. I was like,
time together, like how was your day, and that closeness is probably a big part of what helped him stay as grounded as you can for someone that's so kind of out there.
It sounded like he was talking about himself in the third person for a vast majority of the beginning of it.
He had a very preachy way of speaking. Like everything he's saying is like a universal truth, and not, I don't know, was it kind of dismissive almost towards Joe? Like, look, man, that's how it is. Don't you see it? Type of thing.
He was saying it. He would always reference it to being like talking in poetry, which some of it was. You'd have to like read through the words, and some of it was kind of, I mean, a lot of it was, but it was still like talking over Joe, and just like, you could tell Joe has respect for the guy, but he was, yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying.
Those tattoos were dope though. Did you look at the video? I didn't see it, but they are beyond sick. I mean, we're talking Japanese like huge tuxedo samurai shit and really impressive colors. I mean, it was a pretty intense set of tattoos. That's the same kind of tattooing my brother does in England. He has a company.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and let me see what his Instagram is. Maybe I'll plug him. But he has a ton of followers anyway, so he probably doesn't need this.
I want to follow him.
You just write Callum Hopkins. KALUMHOPKINS. And he does all tap stuff. Kind of all over England, and he used to live in Barcelona. I think he learned it all in Thailand, I believe.
Is this your older brother?
Younger brother.
Yeah, he's got some. That's good work.
Yeah, it's really, really cool stuff. And again, I don't have any tattoos, and if I ever got one, I'd probably go to him. And especially after hearing, you know, like seeing how dope those ones are that David Lee Roth got, I'm like, maybe.
I'm down to get one for sure. These are awesome.
Yeah, they're good, right? Yeah, he's excellent. He was always drawing, like as a kid, like just constantly always drawing, which I was always gave him a hard time about. I'm like, dude, you need to learn math. And it turns out he has a great business doing tattoos. So drawing did work. But that's the kind of thing. Like all my brothers were the same way as me in that sense. We just did the things that we like unapologetically. It didn't matter how many times we heard from other people like, oh, you got to do it this way and you got to live that way. We just like followed what we wanted to do. And they've all kind of landed on their feet with their different types of careers. It's impressive. All different things, but they love it. It's all creative stuff. Yeah, I'm probably the least creative, to be honest.
I think we all have it deep inside of us, and I think that you have it too. It's just a matter of finding it. There was like a switch today that kind of clicked, and I started thinking about things that I want to do as opposed to like have to do for a salary. It seems like now that I have a job and I have a means of getting an income, now it's time to like start revving up and finding what it is I want to do and start living life in that kind of realm. What what do I want to do as rather than like surviving? Because now that I kind of have adapted this abundance mindset, it's like, all right, well, just kind of what to tap into what you just said. It's like things come easily regardless of the avenue you choose, not necessarily easily, but you can be successful if and I don't want to use the word passion either. It's just something you want to do. Like you gotta have something to aim for. Right?
Well, I think it's a few things. I think it's a really good idea to get a hobby, right? Because hobbies are likely to be things you're interested in, but do one that allows you to master a skill as a result, right? And I used to say this to Ash all the time because he was a personal trainer. I'm like, okay, he's getting really good at personal training. This is my buddy from England. Really good at personal training, right? So that skill, I guess you could master in the sense of what that process is. But the workouts themselves are just, yeah, you can get stronger, but then your muscles get weaker as you get older. And then, you know, you can't do as much. Whereas with jiu-jitsu, you can actually, you do that long enough. I don't know if you'll ever master it, but you'll get really good at it. So you're building like an incredible skill set. So if you look at a hobby in that sense is like something, oh, if I do a little bit of this each week over the course of how many hours, 10,000, you can be an expert at it. And then you should be able to in some way sell that service and make it a job. And it's like you're putting yourself through school. So it's worth paying attention to that just for the sake of like you're saying, like, what do you want to do? Well, turning your hobbies into jobs is probably a really good move for people because you already love doing it.
Absolutely. I mean, ideally. Isn't it interesting the perspective that we have as Americans? He was talking about the 10,000 hour cliche, not cliche, but just...
I'm fucking English, dude. What are you talking
about? What is that? Is that yours?
What?
No, David Lee Roth was talking about the Japanese saying that their mentality is 10 hours for like... I can't remember what he said, a day for 10 years or something like that. So over the course of whatever, you have like 40,000 hours or something like that. Like it's quadrupled. Remember what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I don't. That seems like a lot. But you'll definitely get good at it with 40,000 hours.
Yeah.
That's right. A lot of time to put into something.
I wonder what that breaks down to in the years. It's a lot.
Too many. Let's jump over to the Rick Doblin one. First off, MAPS is an organization that I am a big fan of. They're working into the realm of like psychedelic therapy, basically. So working with a licensed therapist while doing psychedelics or MDMA or these different things to help you through past traumas or just deal with your depression or PTSD, those sorts of things. I have some friends here in Bozeman that are one that's a therapist that is moving into that line of work and will be working for MAPS, and then another guy who's ex-special forces that works at a center that primarily helps retired military and ex-special forces guys with similar processes to kind of guide them through PTSD. And it's really cool to hear these pretty spectacular results and just what this guy has done. Like, how many years has he been fighting for this? And he just seems really down to earth and cool and just kind of had this like patient vibe, like, hey, it's going to be 8 more years, but I think we got it. I'm like, this poor fucking guy's been trying to legalize this shit for like 30 years.
He's fortunate, though. He had the upbringing that he did. His parents being semi-supportive, given the circumstances. Him being like 17, saying, I want to drop out of college and go. He was like, I need to be, I want to go study psychedelics. I think he said he built like a, I can't remember what he said he built, but he said he built something with 3,000 bricks and his parents like helped him do it. Remember? Did you hear that part of it?
I don't remember that.
Either way, it was just like an enlightening experience for him to be attached, more or less. But he was like, my parents were super supportive. I dropped out of college in order to go study XYZ. I don't know how this is. It's so interesting that the dynamic between the people that are deciding what drugs are legal and what drugs aren't are people that haven't even tried the drugs in the first place.
That does seem like a fatal flaw.
Like, you know? If you want to pass judge, if you want to pass judgment on something, that's fine. But at least have a fucking frame of reference.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only time that would be acceptable is if the drug is clearly killing people or clearly damaging your health. Or hyper addictive. I mean, it probably would be a bad move for people that want to make heroin illegal for them to start trying heroin. But, I mean, mushrooms and MDMA is not doing that to people. So they probably should be required. Like, hey, you want to ban this? Well, run it through your system a few times. And then tell us if we should make
it illegal. Then you have a frame of reference. Then you have a frame of reference to be like, yeah, I think this is really going to damage society. Or you're going to be like, ooh, that was kind of insightful. That could help me, especially given like a circumstance or like an environment where it is under supervision and it is kind of trying to benefit. Because he made reference to that one situation where those two girls took MDMA and it was kind of subjective because the one girl was at like a rave and she had these thoughts come up from a previous like sexual encounter or something. And she said that MDMA hurt her because she couldn't express those feelings to her friend and she kind of bottled them down even though they had come up. And a girl in a similar circumstance had a similar like reoccurrence and had like some sexual trauma come up and she discussed it with her friend and she was saying how beneficial it was to have the MDMA. And the basis of that argument was like, you just have to embrace it. Like if you're going to deny it, then that's going to falter you. But if you embrace it and you do the whole thing through, you probably will see the benefits.
Well, they often say that about a problem, right? A problem shared is a problem halved. So it's one thing to be experiencing
that's a good
that brings up these memories that maybe you've blocked out. And then, you know, to protect you. I'm sure that's why you have memories that get kind of blocked out. And then if you have nowhere for it to go, it's just popped up. And now you're thinking about it without getting a chance to share it and get some feedback or just have someone know that it happened to you and not judge you for it and be supportive and open up a conversation, then
absolutely.
It would make sense that it would be better. And that's the thing, right? I mean, he's not saying, hey, these drugs should be legal so we can all just go and party. He's saying, actually, the most beneficial way for these drugs to be legal is highly controlled and under professional supervision, but the right supervision. You know, not the FDA saying, you need a doctor and a PhD and a scientist. No, just a therapist, someone who understands, you know, your mind and emotions and can help you through the conversation that's coming up.
I would love to do that, to be honest. It'd be great to have somebody that was experienced and had some kind of insight to ride the trip out with you, per se.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. I think that it could be very beneficial. It'd be interesting. I mean, he's saying that they're going to have thousands of centers, hopefully, over the next few years. They already have thousands of centers for the mescaline. Ketamine. That's it. They have ketamine therapy all over the country.
Right.
So hopefully they have these. And it's really cool to hear Dan Crenshaw working with Tim Ryan. Like, look, I'm not a Republican, but I've always liked Dan Crenshaw on the podcast. You know, certain things he's pretty hardline about because you're like, yeah, he's a Republican. He's making that point. But he's very reasonable. He represents what I would want to see in any type of politician. A conversation. And the fact that he's pushing to have more funding for the vets so that they can get treatment. Right. You know, he's looking at it not from a political, because this probably does push against his own political ambitions, because it's going to be hard to persuade a lot of Republicans that legalizing these sorts of drugs is a good move.
I think foresight is one of his biggest strong points. Like, he sees the end game and like how certain things affect. I mean, even in his book, he would talk about how raising minimum wage and this, that, and the other, how it affects certain things and how on the outside it looks good. And this, he sees the details. But yes, to be bipartisan, and he was talking about how Dan Crenshaw, and I can't remember the other representative on the
Tim
left.
Tim Ryan,
he's like, to have somebody that both sees the same situation play out and to have like an objective thought process is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean the Navy SEAL Foundation giving away their maximum donation amount of $50,000 to MAPS. Like, they're not saying, hey, we're all military philosophy and that doesn't go with us, so we're just going to drug all these PTSD guys up. They're like, no, we want the best solution, hands down, all the time, and if the research is pointing that way, we don't care what it is. And
they go against the dogma as long as it's taken. That's the way that everybody in their whole world should think about it. If it goes against the grain, and either way, if you're trying to take care of your family or your loved ones, it doesn't matter what the prescribed cultural thought process is. It's what makes the most sense.
Yeah, it's what makes sense. And right. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, you know, when he contacted the DEA to try and get, I can't remember what he said he needed to get approved. They needed something done, and the DEA just kind of stalled them, and they had to take him to court. And
and they end up winning, right?
Yeah, it's just all these rules.
Loops and stuff to jump through.
And the same thing with the FDA, putting in all these requirements, basically making it so expensive that these treatments can't even happen. It's just like, what are you trying to gain from this? Are you just being assholes? Right. Or like...
That's what I got out of it.
I don't know, man. It does. It makes you mad when you hear things like that.
Have you done MDMA?
Yeah, I did that when I was younger. Yeah. It's great.
I saw no negative benefits. I mean, yes, the next day if you're doing it. And normally what I noticed too is that I was obviously encompassed with a lot of other substances, like majority alcohol, so you'd feel like trash the next day. But I wonder if the few times I just took it solely in small doses, like it was so enlightening and just refreshing and felt good to do around your friends. Like it didn't really seem like there's a whole lot of negative to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I only ever did it like on its own. Like I wasn't drinking or putting anything else in my system with it. And it was like in the rave scene back in like 2000, you know, like after high school. And, and it didn't really ever affect me too heavily. I would be tired the next day, but it wasn't like, I was lucky. I always did it with good people and in good environments, and it was just good times. I mean, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with these things, because you could probably do it with the wrong crowd or in the wrong environment, or try doing something stupid like driving or something complex that you shouldn't be. But I mean, given the right environment, I mean,
yeah,
you can't have a bad trip, you know. It's just
promoted stronger relationships and tighter bonds, to be honest. Not to sound like a hippie, but that's what I've kind of experienced.
Yeah, hearing that he had that chemist make him a kilo of it for $4,000. And it's the purest stuff ever. And it lasts like how long? 30 years? 40 years?
And he's still never tried it.
Joe was not convinced.
He said he's got a deal. He said he got a kilo and a half. So I'm wondering, is that like 3.3 pounds of fucking pure MDMA?
That's how much the chemist said that he made. I don't know if he gave it all, like sold it all to Rick or what the deal was, but...
he just has that sitting in a box somewhere, or what?
I don't know. It better be in a safe if anyone finds that.
Jesus, we might save the world.
Yeah, a huge rave. But yeah, we'll see.
Did you hear that reference whenever he was trying to talk about how they would spray acid over the top of the soldiers?
Oh, God.
In hopes that they would just like drop their guns? He's like, in theory, that might work, but that would take a lot of acid.
Yeah, and I don't know. That kind of chemical warfare is crazy. It is nefarious to hear what the government has tried to come up with to take people out. I mean, who knows? It's not pretty stuff. It's just easy to not trust what the government's up to. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a good thing I can trust you, bud.
All right. Well, I'm not the government. Well, that's going to be it. That's a wrap for this week. A bit of a shorter one this week, but that's how it goes. Thanks, as always, for listening to us ramble on and enjoying the Rogan Pods with us. Write a good review if you want. We appreciate that. And thanks, as always, guys.
We appreciate you guys. Love you. Peace and love.